on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Snarly, gotta cut you down.
Welcome to the second hour of Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. And statewide on Civic Radio. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making. And I'll tell you what, we're a week out from our primary, the August 9 primary. In the old days, not too long ago, before Scott Walker, the primary was the beginning of September, so we would have had another month. There was some allegation that under the law, we had to give time for absentee ballots to be mailed to servicemen overseas, and they had to have time to get them back, so therefore it should be August, early August. The truth is, we always mail ballots to veterans. I'm suspicious that it was moved basically into the middle of the summer where fewer people would vote. I think that was a mistake. Walker did it. But in any event, it is what it is. The primary is a week from today. Definitely vote. Definitely vote. And the reason I say that is if you plan to vote in the Democratic primary, people look at relative enthusiasm in voting. So obviously there are some primaries that are hotter than others. The governor primary is hot on the Republican side. The Democratic primary was hot on the Senate side. But in general, people do look at relative voting in primaries. It's important to vote. I'm going to go through some of these races. I'm not going to give recommendations, but I want to give you some background and give this some thought as to who you're going to support. In the governor race, Governor Evers unopposed. On the Republican side, there are a number of candidates, but the three major ones are the Duchess of Foxconn, Rebecca Clayfish, Tim Michaels, a business executive, Tim Ramthan, who's an assemblyman out of Campbellsport. Now, they've had several debates, or at least head-to-head. There was another one last night. And there's nothing that any one of these characters said that leads me to believe that they'd be even a competent governor. All three of them, amazingly, quite frankly, last night, all declined to say that they would support Donald Trump if he ran for president in 2024. They didn't say they wouldn't. They snuck around. You know, well, it's too early to tell. There's going to be a lot of people, blah, blah, blah. But if they wanted to endorse him, they could have endorsed him. Michaels was endorsed by Trump. Michaels, Donald Trump, endorsed him. Donald Trump is coming in at the end of this week in Waukesha, in the fairgrounds, to do a rally for him. I assume that he cleared this with Trump in advance. He didn't say he wouldn't endorse Trump. I don't trust any of these people, as far as I can throw them. Ramthan was actually praised by Trump because he is the most hardcore right-wing election denier. But even he wouldn't support Trump. He said he hadn't made up his mind. And the Duchess is somewhat miffed that Trump didn't support her. The Duchess said that she would not make up her mind. But the Duchess, frankly, doesn't support people who do support her. Robin Voss came out early. Robin Voss, the speaker, illegitimately speaker, because he's the speaker of a gerrymandered legislature where Democrats get half or more of the vote statewide and they get one-third of the seats in the legislature. Voss would not be the speaker with fair maps. Voss would not be in the legislature with fair maps, but it is what it is. He came out for Clayfish, and then all of the Republican candidates try to look like they're really anti-establishment, and they all turn on Voss. Now, Clayfish did it a little less directly and toxically than the rest, but if somebody once said, and it's very true, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. If you want a friend in Madison, get a dog. You endorse someone and they'll stick a shiv in your ribs in a heartbeat if they think it'll get them elected. Anyway, so there you have it. I don't know, if you're going to vote in the Republican primary, you want somebody who will do the least injury. You like somebody who wouldn't betray the state and the country. And you sort around this dog's breakfast of various ideas these characters have come up with, and you don't want any one of them as governor. But there you have it. It'll be Clayfish, Michaels, Rampton, and there are a couple of others that no one ever heard of, and they will fade into the sunset. Now, lieutenant governor has contested primaries in both parties, and that's very important. I'll tell you why. Because some lieutenant governors become governor. Marty Schreiber, my friend Marty Schreiber, in the 1970s was Pat Lucey's lieutenant governor, and Pat got appointed ambassador to Mexico, and Marty became became governor. So it's kind of like vice president. You don't go, oh, well, it's not all that important. Well, you know something, it is important, because they could be in the catbird seat. There's a great anecdote. There's a book about Truman's presidency that there's a great anecdote. Truman is sitting with a couple of the senators in April of 1945 and wondering if Roosevelt will dump them in the next election and this, that, and the other thing, and they're having a bourbon, and it's their Friday afternoon deal or whatever. Suddenly, a courier shows up and says, Mr. Vice President, you must get to the White House immediately. And they escort him. Suddenly, he has an escort. Through the Capitol he goes, and there's Eleanor Roosevelt and the Secretary of State and a few other cabinet members, and they said, Mr. President, Franklin Roosevelt is dead. Now, at that point, he hadn't even been told about the hydrogen or the atomic bomb. He didn't know anything. And the war is still going on. Germany, basically, by April of 45, was done, but Japan wasn't. And he had to decide, do we invade Japan, kill 600,000 GIs and about 2 million Japanese citizens, or drop the bomb? And that's what happens, and that's a very high historic level. But even at the state level, suddenly something happens, somebody dies, somebody takes an appointment, walk in your office and say, you're the governor. Okay, well, here's the deal. On the Democratic side, which is the one I'm interested in, there are two candidates, a gentleman named Peng Her, H-E-R, his name is Her, but it's a guy, Peng Her. He's a leader in the Hmong community. He was on Tony Evers' transition team. He's apparently a very fine guy. And State Representative Sarah Rodriguez, and she is in the assembly. She's a former nurse and a healthcare executive, and people think quite highly of her. So your choice will be between Sarah Rodriguez and Peng Her. On the on the Republican side, everybody seems to have come out from under a rock or dropped out of the corner somewhere. And you have, what, nine of them? You have Patrick Teston and Roger Roth, who are state senators. You have Will Martin, Kyle Udis, David Varnum, Cindy Warner, David King, and Jonathan Wickman. And I've got to be honest. If virtually any of those folks came walking down the street, and I try to pay attention to this stuff, I would not know who they were. But in any event, one of them will win. You have to assume the name recognition will be one of the state senators, Roger Roth or Patrick Teston, but I don't know. Who knows? And then they would run with either Clayfish Michaels or Rampton. And they'll run against Tony Evers and either Sarah Rodriguez or Peng Her. And that will be what happens. Secretary of State is hugely important. Your Secretary of State, if you had a bad one, an election denier could try to interfere with the election. On the Democratic side, you have Doug LaFollette and Alexia Sabour. Alexia Sabour is the chairwoman of the Dane County Democratic Party, but not elected to partisan office otherwise. And Doug LaFollette is a longtime veteran Secretary of State. I know Doug's friend of mine. He's a short-tailed relative of the famous Fighting Bob LaFollette. He's like, a second cousin or something, once removed. And I think Doug LaFollette has a PhD in chemistry. I may be wrong on that, but you know, he's a very smart guy. I know that he is highly regarded in that regard. Anyway, Doug LaFollette and Alexia Sabour, I'm sure, would stand up to Republicans, but Doug is an expert at doing it. On the Republican side, they have Amy Lauterbach, Jay Schrader, Justin Schmitka. You know, look, I don't know these folks. Lauterbach, I think, has some assembly connection. I think she's bad news, quite frankly. You don't want her in. You don't want people in the Republican Party getting into office and wrinkling their nose even at elections. You know, even if they're not outright deniers, going, oh, well, maybe there were problems. That is an insidious, cancerous type of spread, and we don't want it. Do not want a Republican Secretary of State, in my opinion. Treasurer, on the Democratic side, we have Aaron Richardson, Angelito Tenorio, Jillian Bettino. Jillian Bettino had been running for the Senate, dropped out and ran for treasurer. She's a medical doctor. Angelito Tenorio is from, I think, West Allis, in Milwaukee County. I believe he'd be the first member of Filipino descent who would get in statewide office. I do not know Aaron Richardson, but one of them will be our nominee. On the Republican side, you have Orlando Owens and John Lieber. I don't know either one of them, but I know enough to say I do not want any Republican with his hands on the money. I do not believe Republicans are competent in administering money. Period. Period. That's the party that was going to give $4 billion to Foxconn. We're a billion out already, still spending money. Turned down $1 billion in train money, $1 billion in Medicaid money. We do not want a treasurer who's Republican around money. Now, the Senate, we had at one point Lazary, Adlewski, Nelson, and Mandela Barnes as the main ones. And then now it's Mandela. The other three dropped out and endorsed him. We have Steve Olicaro, Peter Pekarsky. Peter Pekarsky has a degree in electrical engineering from MIT and very competent on scientific matters. We have a guy named Koo Lee and Daryl Williams. Don't know them at all. But I personally think it's unusual that people that spent the kind of money and ran the great campaigns that Lazary or Godlewski and Nelson did would drop out just before the election and endorse a guy. I mean, you know, stay the course for the benefit of your supporters. Stay the course, for Pete's sake, but that's what it is. And believe it or not, Ron Johnson has a primary opponent, a guy named David Schrader. I don't know beans about him, but I don't want either one of them in there. AG, we have Josh Colrain unopposed, but on the Republican side, Eric Toney, Karen Miller, and Adam Jarkow. Don't really know them, but Karen Miller and Adam Jarkow are election deniers. You've got to get them out of there. If you're going to vote in the Republican primary, I think you got to vote for Eric Toney, because the other two are truly bad news. He at least occasionally says things that leads me to believe that he may not be a Trumper. Now, this may be the kiss of death for me to say this over the air. So what? So what? I was the chairman of the Democratic Party for two terms, elected, and I also stood up to the far left in our party as well as everybody else, and you're hearing my opinion right now. You're hearing my opinion right now. We're going to be going to break shortly. The lines are alive. Do not hang up. Do not hang up. I'll get back to you right after the break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
As the snow flies.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Robert of West Allis, my friend. Thanks for calling Western Monday, Robert.
Morning, Matt. I really appreciate you, well, in general, but reading the ballot and who's on it. You know, I'm very excited about what's going on with the radio station with Zach Wiles and the expansion, and it's just wonderful. Having supported one of those candidates, you know, giving money and knocking doors and then having them drop out, very, very frustrating. You know, I like that the radio stations are going more local. There's going to be a more Wisconsin local bent to it. And I guess I'd request over the next week or a week out from the primary to get people excited about coming out and vote. It would be wonderful to get some of these candidates on your show, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, to kind of explain their positions. People are very busy. I'm sure the candidates would appreciate it, you know, to kind of define what they're all about. And I'm sure as a consumer of media, I'd appreciate it because it's such a time saver as opposed to going through all those websites. So if you guys could make that happen, that would kind of be amazing to have people on and kind of, you know, tell them in their own words why they're the correct choice. Thanks.
You know, Robert, thanks a lot. That means a great deal. Let me tell you something, everybody. The good news, and obviously we're going to wait for the station to announce it, and I'm not going to get into individual markets, but the scope of this radio station is expanding. Remember, at one time, I was on just in Milwaukee, then I was on just in Madison, and now it's Milwaukee, Madison. There'll be other cities, too. So stand by for a good announcement on that one. The second thing, Robert, here's the deal. There are only two Senate candidates, and I've invited every candidate for every office to call in. Everyone, I don't care if the Democrat or Republican, call in, make your case. I'll give you some time. The only two who called in were Peter Pekarsky and Steve Olicara. They both called in. None of the others called in, and nobody from any other race called in. So, guys, let me, if anybody's listening who's affiliated with those campaigns, this is pretty rudimentary. How would you like some free airtime? Free airtime. Now, Peter Pekarsky has advertised on this station, and the station appreciates that. And the rates to advertise on this radio station are minuscule compared to a lot of other media outlets, but you get a real penetration. And now you're going to get a penetration statewide, and you're going to get a very heavy listenership among people who are the opinion makers and influencers in the Democratic primaries. And if you're a Republican candidate, some have realized and advertised, because it takes kind of the edge, the toxic edge off, and moderates think, okay, well, you can't be a true right-wing nut. Okay? And so my invitation is, call in. We don't do the kinds of interviews that other stations do. To me, that's one way of doing it and chewing up time, and, you know, some of it can be valid. But we're very no-nonsense. We're very direct. You want to be interviewed, call me up and say, I'm so-and-so, and I'm running for this position. I'll say, great. Yeah, I know of you. I've researched you. So tell me, what are the issues that you think are the most important? Why would you be the best? And you can make your case. And it's free. And there's a lot of studies that show that free media is considered more trustworthy, influential than paid media. If you see somebody's ad on TV, okay, that's cool. But if somebody's interviewed on TV, you're going to pay a lot more attention to it. A lot more attention to it. Okay, Robert, thank you. And just spread the word, everybody. Spread the word. Going back to the lines again. This is all about the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend, you're next. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Hey, good morning, Matt. That's one of the reasons I'm taking a hard look at Peter Pekarsky. He ran ads on your station, and he came on and talked. And otherwise, I wouldn't know anything about him. So I'm not for sure, but I'm considering voting for him because I like what his message was. So that's pretty cool that candidates to, and you guys are really getting big now. Hey, quickly at the end here, are we getting an axis between Iran, Russia, and China? Thanks, Matt. Bye.
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul, and I'm glad I have 2 minutes to answer it. But thank you for your comments, of course. And, you know, there's still going to be a Senate primary, obviously, and Mandela Barnes is a friend of mine. I know Mandela. I think he'd be a great senator. Peter Pekarsky is a friend of mine. I know him. I think he'd be a great senator. I've met Stephen Olicara. I think highly of him. And so let's go to it, guys, but thank you for that. And Iran, Russia, and China. Here is the thing that slays me, absolutely slays me. All three of them hate each other. So one of the elementary things we should be doing in foreign policy is fostering, frankly, those disputes among them to take the heat off of us. Russia and China fought a shooting war in the middle of the Vietnam War. Most people don't know that, over a disputed island, 1969. People shot at each other. They're racially different. They're religiously different. They have nothing in common. China would cheat them and abuse them if they had half a chance. Russia the same way. Russia looks down on Asia. The Russo-Japanese War in 1905 Russia decided that they were going to attack the Japanese in the Far East. And, of course, Japan is not China, but, you know, that's how they thought of Asia. And Japan beat them. So, China, if you're listening, gang up on Russia for us right now, okay? And Russia, if you're listening, gang up on China. And when it comes to Iran, Russia is Russian Orthodox religion. China is communist, but they have a strong Buddhist and Confucian tradition. And Iran is Shiite Muslim, and they consider themselves Aryans. That's why they changed the name of their country to Iran, Aryans. Well, who cares what they are? But they're the old Persian Empire, and they think, oh, we have a history that goes back thousands of years, so therefore we should rule the world. China goes back 5,000 years. Russia goes back 1,000 years. And they're all bad news, so thank you for bringing that up. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. And then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round an angry...
In the year 2525...
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Terry of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Terry? Terry of Eau Claire.
The state. Yeah, I'm here, Matt. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. What's on your mind today, Terry?
Yeah. What I'm concerned about, Matt, is this state senate. As I understand it, it's 21 to 12 Republicans, I believe. And if they get one more seat, then... it won't matter. Tony Evers can't veto. They can override the veto. Am I right on that?
That's right. They're one seat away from a veto-proof majority in the Senate. So if they pick up a Senate seat and it's 22 to 11, remember, this is an illegitimate Senate. It's gerrymandered, but Republican judges have said it's okay, and the Republican illegitimate legislature has blessed it. So if it's 22-11, you're right. Evers can veto, and they can override the veto with a 2-to-1 vote. They still have to override it in the assembly, but that is approaching danger territory too. So what's your view, Terry, on what's going on up in Eau Claire in that matter?
Well,
a recommendation, or do you have some solution to what we should do about that?
Well, let me just say this. Janet Bealey was in an accident, and she's not going to run. So we have a gal running for that seat on the Democratic side named Kelly Westlund. She's worked for Senator Baldwin, as I understand, in the Eau Claire office, so she knows the district. But hopefully she can... carry the district against a guy named Robert Romaine Quinn, who was in the assembly, but now he's running for the Senate seat that'll be vacated by Senator Bealey. So I'm hoping that Kelly Westland can win this seat and preserve that 21-12 at least.
Terry, spell her last name for us, and give me her name again.
Kelly. K-E-L-L-Y, Westlund, W-E-S-T-L-U-N-D.
Very good. Kelly, so she's Westlund, our candidate, the Democratic candidate, up in the Ashland Superior area, right?
Yeah, Ashland Superior, all the way down to Rice Lake, all the northern area going east, too, towards Green Bay. Quite an area up here. You know,
yes, it is. That's a terrific tip. Terry, thanks for calling in. Everybody listening who has any relatives up there, if you're listening up there, we want to get behind Kelly Westlund. You know, Janet Bealey is a friend. I feel very badly for Janet Bealey. She's involved in a horrible accident, and I feel very badly for the victims of that accident. There was a 5-year-old girl and her mom were killed. And so it's a terrible, terrible tragedy. And Janet will no longer be in the Senate, period. But you can't let that seat go Republican. If that seat goes Republican and they go up 22 to 11, it doesn't matter what Tony Evers does. So it's very important. Thanks a lot. Mark from the SAC, my friend, you're next. What's on your mind today, Mark?
Right up here. I grew up in Douglas County there, and it used to be pretty blue up in that region of the state. What still gets me is how Hagedorn actually, you know, approved of. He should have told the Supreme Court, you know, nuts to you and said, no, we're going to go with a more honest redistricting in the state of Wisconsin, because our state constitution requires our districts to be compact and contiguous, which, of course, they are not under the Republicans. There's little islands of corruption that they picked out, you know, so they could, you know, pick their voters rather than having districts the way they're supposed to be. I mean, it is so, and hopefully we can get a Supreme Court, get the Supreme Court back next year for a more moderate view of things and relitigate this before the Supreme Court. I mean, that with it is just ridiculous that we are stuck with this illegitimate legislature, because it is, our Constitution is clear on how the districts are supposed to be laid out, and they're not supposed to be laid out in the back room, you know, with a bunch of lawyers and the Republican Party deciding who's going to vote for them individually. I mean, it is just ridiculous that we are, that Hagedorn, you know, they say, well, Hagedorn is pretty good. Well, he, you know, voted right on one thing, pretty much. But he pretty, you know, he consistently sides with the Republican Party. And let's remember, he was Scott Wanker's, you know, the man on, point man for Act 10. And Scott Walker never faced the protesters during the Act 10 protests. He squirted through his tunnels like a little rat, you know, never facing the protesters, unintimidated my ass.
Yeah, good point. You know, these are a lot of good points you're raising. And I want to pick up on something Mark from the SAC just said. This is very, very important. We can talk till we're blue in the face about this election and that election, but there's only one election that's really going to matter. Because as long as the judges are majority Republican, they'll just say, well, this is what we think, and everybody goes, oh, well, and they obey them. Well, there is a Supreme Court election coming up in the spring. Nobody's paying attention to it because what the heck? The primary is in February and the general election's in April. And everybody's a lot more worried, they should be, about governor, senator, and this and that. However, if one of the people that's not, the person that's not running is Pat Rogensack, who was the Chief Justice, and she is one of the three that voted not to certify Joe Biden. She's not running. That seat is open. The Republicans are putting up a guy named Dan Kelly, who is an election denier, and he's a Trumper. The other side, which is us, and this is a great judge, is a judge named Janet Protasiewicz. Judge Janet, we call her in Milwaukee. She's more than a 20-year veteran of the DA's office in Milwaukee. She's an experienced, tough prosecutor, and she's an experienced, tough judge, and a fair judge. And she has come out and blasted the decision where the Republicans, the majority Republicans, outlawed drop boxes. And she will get in there, and when she gets in there, there'll be no more Trump majority in that court, believe me, okay? So yeah, there are gonna be some other candidates as well. I think there's a judge in Dane County, who seems like a fine person, but really the choice is gonna be between Judge Janet Protasiewicz, and this guy Dan Kelly. So stand by, keep your powder dry. Yes, these other elections are important, but come on, come on. Yeah, if we don't take the Supreme Court into a fair, independent mode that stands up for our elections and lets it go Trump again, we're going to have gerrymandering to the year 2050. And a lot of you out there aren't going to be around in 2050. So let's get going here. The state Supreme Court, Judge Janet Protasiewicz, is the most important race in the long term that's going to be coming up soon. I'll tell you, I suspected, and I hope I'm wrong, that Manchin Sinema were playing a good cop, bad cop deal on the soft infrastructure. So now Manchin can look good and agree with Biden and Schumer. Sinema is strangely silent on whether to back the deal. This compromise on soft infrastructure, which would increase IRS enforcement and get the tax cheats and fund clean energy and do a lot of other things. For instance, let the government negotiate on pharmaceuticals and save billions of dollars. Every other insurance company and every other company in the world goes to the pharmaceutical companies and says, look, we're going to buy a million pills, statin pills. So give us a break, not the federal government, because of the Republican Party. Cinema gets her money from Big Pharma. She's silent. I am, woe is my heart, suspicion. Remember that song? Woe is my heart, suspicion. Why is Cinema silent? She and Manchin are the Bobbsey twins. And everybody goes, oh, Manchin, this is great. He's come around. He's going to agree with Biden. Is this another strip tease? Is this another Lucy putting the football down? You go to kick it and she yanks it up. I may be wrong. I may do Cinema a disservice. It may be that she and Manchin are not playing good cop, bad cop, that she will go along with it. But the two of them have not been reliable Democratic voters. They are on some things, but not on a lot of things. And there you have it. Right now, this bill that Biden, through Schumer, set up with Manchin provides for full IRS enforcement. It's going to produce about $1 trillion in taxes that are presently being avoided by hedge funds, investment firms, and others. It's about time. George W. Bush is the one who basically stripped down the IRS so it didn't have enforcement power because there weren't enough agents and forensic accountants. It's also going to let us lower pharmaceutical prices. The Cinema gets her money from Big Pharma. Stand by. Deeply suspicious that good cop, bad cop is being played on us. But we will see. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going to the lines. Bill of Oconomowoc, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Bill?
Good morning. Morning, Matt. You do a great job. I think that America has to celebrate. Biden did something fantastic. Number one guy in after bin Laden was taken out. I'm watching Fox channels. They hardly even mention it. Now, here's what has to be mentioned going into the midterms big time. I'm going to start a new slogan, Biden delivers. We have the lowest unemployment. We have gas is coming down. Ukraine is really giving Russia a go at it, and if Biden got a little more assertive, it'd be over. He is getting a lot accomplished. People want to harp on Fox. Oh, we're in a recession. You have to admit, we're in a recession. Well, yeah, if you work at it hard enough, you can convince yourself of anything. Yes, we're in a little bit of a slow time, but Biden has been delivering. I am sick and tired of people who can't recognize any of that and almost deny it. So in the midterms, my motto is Biden delivers. I'm sending that to all my Republican friends. And last but not least, just food for thought, on the gun issue, to get a concealed carry weapon, it's only 4 hours of training. To shoot a deer in Wisconsin, hunter safety, that's weeks. You got to handle with a gun. You got to handle a gun safety. So we test you more to kill an animal than you do a person. That's what I'll leave the thought in you on gun control. Thanks and have a great day, Matt.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Yeah, no, Bill, that, as always, very profound stuff. And I'll tell you something. Everybody out there, Bill used to be, you know, a Republican. Bill is a gun owner and a hunter. And I respect his opinion. And I think he's making a good point on that. Why should you have to have more safety training to shoot a deer than to shoot a person? Everybody, I think, has the wrong idea here. If you are a gun owner, you respect the weapon, you respect its potential power. You make sure it doesn't fall in the wrong hands. You make sure it's secure. You make sure you know how it operates and the limited times where it was lawful to use it. And that takes more than 4 hours. And a lot of these people don't have any training, Bill, because what happens is they buy it at a gun show or they buy it over the internet and they just carry it. And nobody's going around checking them. So the point of the matter is that that is very, very sage advice from a guy who's a hunter and a guy who's a gun owner and who's a guy who is very sympathetic to the Second Amendment. It's some common sense. You do not want yahoos running around that don't respect the weapon and don't know anything about the weapon. Come back to the lines. Gary of Sussex, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today? Gary of Sussex.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about what you said just now and what Bill said. Now, yeah, unemployment is down, and that looks really well. Price of gas is still sky high. It's still around $4. Just because it went down a little bit or a dollar doesn't mean that that's a great price. We kind of forget about what we used to be paying. We're used to paying around $2 a gallon. But I do want to make a comment about last week when I was talking to you about Ron Johnson and voting against the bill to help the veterans. Now, as far as you didn't let me finish what I was going to say. You kind of cut me off. But the thing is, on this bill, it was passed by something like 87% of the Republicans and Democrats all voted for the bill the first time. The second time, which nobody ever mentions, is they threw all this other garbage into the bill, and that's why the Republicans all voted against it. So it wasn't that the Republicans and Ron Johnson's not supporting the wounded veterans, because they all did. It was when they looked at the bill again and threw all this other garbage on
there. Gary, like what is the garbage you're referring to? What are you specifically referring to got added?
The Build Back Better stuff that they wanted to throw back on that stuff. I don't know if they were, you know, I'm being facetious now, but, you know, Nancy Pelosi needs a new fence type thing, or Chuck Schumer needs some new cars. You know, I'm being facetious. I don't know exactly what they threw in. I didn't read the bill. But all I know is the Republicans, they all vote against it. Me, you, and every person in this country knows that these veterans that lose their arms and their legs, you know, I'd give them all $1 million as far as I'm concerned. They deserve to have a good, solid life that they can live without have to be stuck in a box, you know. And I know,
Gary,
that we all agree on that.
Let me tell you something. And by the way, I never cut anybody off. I think you called the last time close to the end of the show, and I have no control over that. But this time you've had your say. But I want to tell you, with all respect, Gary is a principled conservative. I like having Gary call in. But, Gary, I think you've been given mistaken information about all the stuff loaded. And I know you're being facetious about the fence and the cars, so I'm not talking about that. But Build Back Better was not loaded in this bill. What happened was it passed the Senate with about 87 votes. You're right, a lot of Republicans. It goes to the House, and frequently there are very, very small changes that are not substantive. And then it goes to a conference committee, and they come up with the final bill. What happened here was, yes, the Republicans voted for it, although Ron Johnson did not. Then it goes to the House. They made, you know, they polished it or whatever. It did not include any of the garbage you're talking about. Then it goes to a conference committee. It goes to the conference committee, and when it comes back to the Senate for passage, what had happened then is the soft infrastructure, Build Back Better soft infrastructure bill that you're referring to had been separately passed, agreed to by Schumer and Manchin. Mitch McConnell got angry and decided that he would then filibuster the veterans bill in retaliation, and Ron Johnson went along with that. Yes, people who lose their arms and limbs get covered. People who get shot get covered. But people who get COPD and lung cancer because they're exposed to toxic burn pits, and, you know, there are no environmental laws in Afghanistan. They're all murderers. It's a culture of sadism and murder. It's a jihadist culture. And so they don't care what they burn and who's exposed to it. And so this bill would simply recognize that the burn pit bill, that people who had lung damage and other kinds of damage that you can't see, like an amputated limb or a bullet in the shoulder, that these people would somehow still get covered. I have no doubt that most of the Republicans would agree to it, but as a tactical matter, what they're doing is they're going, well, okay, this is a revenge thing. And I think that's wrong. I mean, you know, it just flat out is. Gary, thanks a lot for calling in. Always enjoy your calling in. I want to get in one other reference before we go to the end of the show. Today is primary day around the country, but not in Wisconsin. We're next Tuesday. But here's the status of the 10 Republican congressmen that voted to impeach Trump. Okay, Steve Scalise, and these are not just the ones that voted to impeach Trump, but Steve Scalise and the ones that stood for Trump are going around boasting about the hard infrastructure that somehow they voted against, and now they are taking credit for it. But the ones that did the hardcore stuff, the congressmen that voted to impeach, Anthony Gonzalez in Hawaii, John Katko in New York, Fred Upton in Michigan, Adam Kinzinger in Illinois, are not running for re-election. Tim Rice of South Carolina lost his primary because Trump came in for the opponent. David Valdeo of California won his, but his opponent was so bad in the primary, even Trump didn't endorse him. That leaves four others of the 10. Liz Cheney's primary is in a couple of weeks. But Peter Meyer of Michigan, Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington, Dan Newhouse of Washington, all voted to impeach Trump. And they all have primaries. And that is going on today. So one of the things you may want to look at tonight when you evaluate who won, who lost, and so on, is that three people who stood up to Trump and voted to impeach him, Peter Meyer of Michigan, Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington, Dan Newhouse of Washington, we're all on the ballot today. Today. Four of the others stepped down. Liz Cheney is in a couple of weeks. Tom Rice of South Carolina lost. The only guy who won his primary is Dave Valdeo of California. And that's only because the guy he ran against was so bad, Trump didn't even endorse him. But I referenced Steve Scalise, and this is, how bad is this? The people that voted for hardcore infrastructure are now going around boasting about the money they brought back that they voted against. Steve Scalise got $1 billion for flood mitigation in Louisiana. He said, I'm the guy. Ashley Hinson of Iowa, a dam in Iowa, she voted against it and boasts about it in her reelection, Republican. Tony Gonzalez of Texas, there was creek revitalization, millions of dollars, voted against it, boasting about it. And you know something? 24% of the people in this country know that hard infrastructure passed. 30%, 7% don't even know it. 30% think it's still being worked on. I think the Democrats have really got to get out big time in what they've accomplished. Just so you know, we're going to the end of the show. Great show. Great call-ins as always. Matt Flynn, Direct. We're back same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.